Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And New Jersey listeners, we are coming to Montclair next Tuesday. That's Tuesday, August 30th, just 5 days from today. We will broadcast live next Tuesday from the Kasser Theater at Montclair State University. Tickets are free, but reservations are required. So go to WNYC.org and click on events. Our guests will include former governor and 9/11 commission chair Tom Kane. Our own Bob Henley, who lives in Jersey and does a lot of Jersey coverage for us, will be there. Didn't you always want to meet Bob Henley? Many of you probably read BaristaNet. And Debbie Gallant, the founder, will be there. NJ Spotlight's John Mooney and many more. Now, in advance of this event, we're collecting on our website 5 reasons you love your New Jersey town or city and 5 reasons you don't. So go over to our webpage, WNYC.org, and click on Brian Lehrer Show and list up to 5 reasons that you love where you live in New Jersey and 5 reasons that you don't. And we will talk about that, some of the things that you post. We don't have to attach your names, but we can at this event at Montclair State on Tuesday, plus Tom Kane and Bob Henley and others. And again, tickets are free, but reservations are required. So go to WNYC.org and click on events, and we'll see you live next Tuesday morning at 10 at the Kasser Theater at Montclair State. Now, Rick Perry may not be sure about whether evolution explains anything biological, as he recently told a child on the campaign trail, but I'm guessing my next guest, scientist David Sloan Wilson, can figure out how evolution explains Rick Perry. His view of evolution isn't limited to the genetic level, but extends to the cultural and community and political levels as well. He's been studying his city, which is Binghamton, where he's a SUNY Distinguished Professor of Biology and Anthropology. And his new book is called The Neighborhood Project, Using Evolution to Improve My City, One Block at a Time. Professor Wilson, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Great introduction.
So, thank you. And evolution is not just about biology. It can be about politics and improving cities.
Absolutely. Evolution goes way beyond genetic evolution. It includes cultural change, psychological change, and even Rick Perry.
Even Rick Perry. Go further with that.
Oh, I mean, there's so much to talk about, but it's so pathetic to hear politicians talk about evolution, isn't it? Half of America is in denial about evolution, but when you understand what it is and how useful it can be, then I think that can be a game changer, and I look forward to that happening in the near future.
Do you think humans are more like ants and bees in that group success is as evolutionarily important as individual success? Is that why you're studying neighborhoods this way in Binghamton?
That's half of it. So many people associate evolution with selfishness, as if altruism, the good side of nature and human nature, cannot be explained by evolution. But evolution explains the full spectrum. And the reason it's important is that we need to create the environments that causes goodness in all of its forms to be the successful evolutionary strategy. We have the know-how to do that, and my book shows how it can actually be applied on the streets of a city such as Binghamton or your New Jersey towns or any other human population, large or small.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting about altruism, and we've talked about it with an evolutionary psychologist on this show before, that survival of the fittest is not just man against man, dog eat dog for survival, but you're going to more successfully survive to pass on your genes in many cases if you figure out how to work cooperatively with your neighbors to grow things and build things, and for that matter, to fight wars against other groups who, you know, who may want to stop your genes from being passed down.
Yeah, it's not all niceness, and so you make a good point that evolution explains the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly. That includes between group conflict, and very often we know this. You don't need a scientist to tell you this. People are as good as gold towards each other within their own groups to exterminate other groups. So we need to understand evolution, because if we leave it unmanaged, it often takes us where we don't want to go.
So, for example, you're working with churches. You see religion as naturally selected because it helps communities succeed?
Absolutely. Churches are so fascinating to understand from an evolutionary perspective. I study churches very respectfully, unlike my colleague Richard Dawkins. The reason I do is because I know that most enduring religions are wonderful for creating community. And we need to know that wisdom that religions have. And so, and also, I share the same basic objective. And so frequently in my city work and elsewhere, I'm right there in the basements of churches and working alongside religious believers in order to achieve the common goal, basically, of making our communities a better place.
Ironically, though, in that when presidential candidates like Rick Perry appeal to religious voters by denying evolutionary science, they do it in the name of religion.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But, you know, there's someone said that science is accepted when it becomes engineering. And as soon as you present evolution as a useful tool for achieving shared objectives, then everyone wants to use a tool. And so I am actually quite confident that once we begin to think of evolution in this practical way, then resistance to it will fall away, basically. Because, you know, frankly, for most people, whether they believe in evolution or not, it's inconsequential. If you don't believe in evolution, it doesn't have any consequences to speak of. But that changes when you begin to think of evolution as a practical toolkit.
Listeners, we can take a few calls for Professor Wilson, whose book is called The Neighborhood Project, Using Evolution to Improve My City, One Block at a Time. Does any of this ring true with any of you who are active at your community level? 212-433-WNYC. Tell us about a neighborhood project you're involved with. How pro-social, and we're about to talk about that term, is your neighborhood? What works and what doesn't? And can you describe it in evolutionary terms? Do you think that would help you do an even better job of improving your community? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. And you started by sending out a survey to gauge what you call the pro-sociality, how pro-social different neighborhoods are. What does that mean?
Well, basically, ask very straightforward questions. You know, I think it's important to make my community a better place. And people of all ages, including public school students, will answer high or low on that scale and other scales. And so you could get a measure of individual differences in pro-sociality. And they range from very high to very low. And what we did that was unique was we added the residential locations of the students, and that enabled us to create maps of pro-sociality in the city. If all the students of all different kinds were evenly distributed, that map would look like a flat plane. But instead, what we showed is that the city of Binghamton looked like the Himalayas, with tall peaks of neighborhoods that are highly pro-social and deep valleys in which very few of the kids express any interest in helping other people or society as a whole. And then being able to visualize that landscape enables us to begin thinking about how can we raise those valleys into hills.
Tom and Seabright, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I can ask the speaker if to comment on this article I read a few weeks ago in the New York Times. I think I recall saying that in the monkey species, I'm not sure if I'm using the right term, there's bonobos and there's chimpanzees. The former is much more cooperative, humanistic, caring for the others in their group. But the chimpanzee seems to be more hierarchical, more aggressive, more domineering. And I was wondering if there's some parallels in the human species. There might be subgroups, like to explain the behavior of some people in positions of power, say on Wall Street, where they're so rapacious and seem not to have any concern for the outcomes of their behaviors. And then the other people who might be more pro-social or their victims. Do you see any parallels in that, or could there be?
Oh, there's huge parallels, and there's so much interest focused on our closest primate relatives for just that reason. Also, a point I make in my book is that all species have things to say about the human species, and I focus on insects and bees and things like that, which are equally are relevant. But it's all about these two different ways to succeed. One is at the expense of a member of your group, and the other is by making your group competitive compared to other groups. And what you see in both chimps and bonobos are more cooperative than chimps, is that there's a mix, but what causes humans to be so different is that balance shifted so that it became really hard to succeed at the expense of our neighbors. And most of what we think of as moral psychology is all about the way we hold each other in check so that we can function as groups. So we became an ultra-cooperative species, and the rest was history. That's why they're still in the remnants of a rainforest, and we're occupying the entire Earth for better or for worse.
Thank you for your call. Here's an interesting post from somebody on our site, Denise in Dumbo, who writes, I'm involved in trying to green communal spaces in the grounds of my large six-building co-op. It's hard, she writes. I'm curious to hear how Darwinism might help my cause. So many green goals, such as composting, bike lanes, and energy conservation, seem to go against the grain, against the consumer culture, car culture, corporate or financial interests. It's hard to believe environmentalism will eventually rise to the top in a Darwinian sense. Professor, show me the light, she writes.
Well, I think I can, and there's two points to make quickly. One is the importance of natural surroundings for our well-being. Our biological heritage is still with us, so we just plain feel better in natural surroundings than in a barren urban landscape. And there's lots of science to demonstrate that. One of my favorite studies shows that hospital recovery is faster in rooms that have plants in them compared to those that don't. The patients feel better, they feel less pain, and they just recover faster merely by putting plants in the room. So the same goes for our external environments. Point two is that a group that, especially a small group in an apartment complex or something like that, in order to get organized to achieve a shared goal, that's just one of many examples of cooperative groups. And science has much to say about how any group can function adaptively for what they're trying to accomplish. So I'm very optimistic about these things, even though it seems that there's so much that's operating against it.
And we heard from some listeners in our Facebook group about projects they're working on. One's organizing an art walk on the north shore of Staten Island. Another has a project called Sustainable Forest Hills in Forest Hills, Queens. Talk about the Design Your Own Park project, which sounds along the line of what a number of our listeners are writing in about. That's yours.
Right. On our project, we collaborate with the City of Binghamton and the United Way of Broome County to turn vacant lots and other neglected spaces into beautiful neighborhood parks of the neighbor's own design. And we use that as a tool for empowering the neighborhoods in other respects as well. So that's a project that was just starting at the end of my book. I have other articles, actually, on that. But the important point is that I cover the work in the book of Eleanor Ostrom, who was the first woman to win the Nobel Prize in economics, and whose work is very evolutionary and basically shows the ingredients that are required for any group to accomplish their shared goals. And I think there's something close to a how-to manual for getting things done that groups do not necessarily instinctively arrive upon. So coaching is in order. And so for installing parks or all of these great activities, there is a practical toolkit that's available, mm-hmm. which I think is new compared to other perspectives. Although I also hasten to add that there's lots and lots of examples of these great things happening, and nobody used the E word. But actually, when you understand it from an evolutionary perspective, it just makes it more clear and more general and more connected to everything else in our lives.
One more call before we run out of time and go on to talk about Steve Jobs' impact. Peter in Forest Hills, who I think wants to put New York City itself into this context. Yes, Peter?
Yes, I disagree. We have an adversarial society, competitive society. My parking space that I got today is, you know, someone else didn't. I'm occupying an apartment, and someone else isn't. So we are in what it's a winner-take-all society, and the way I see it, we gain by other people's losses, unfortunately, and people who all cooperate, from my view, I've seen fail and are the losers. And in New York City, this is not a place to be cooperating with anyone. People make money by inefficiencies, by people's losses, by people's ignorance. And those who are smarter, more vicious, more cruel are the winners.
It's a harsh view. Professor, can you talk him out of it scientifically?
Yeah, sure. Life can be like that. It all depends on how we structure our environments. If you structure our life in which that competitive at the individual level, that's exactly what you'll get. And life will be nasty, brutish, and short. But I'm pleased to offer an alternative. And that alternative can work for New York City, a mega city, in addition to a little city, such as my city of Binghamton, New York.
And we will have to leave it there, except that since governors have been trying to fix upstate for generations now, it seems like, do you have hope that a solution exists in Binghamton and elsewhere in that whole corridor?
You know, I'll end with this thought. An organism has many organs, and if you take any one of them out, the organism dies.
Well, you took IBM out, which is the big jobs creator. They took themselves out.
That's right. And so the interventions have been tried for decades and decades, and they haven't worked. That's why we still have problems. But that's why we need the right combination of interventions. We need groups and societies with all their organs, and we need evolution to put in all the organs. If anyone is missing, then it doesn't work.
SUNY Binghamton Professor David Sloan Wilson, author of The Neighborhood Project, Using Evolution to Improve My City, One Block at a Time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC coming up next. Jobs, 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 as in Steve. Stay with us.